At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top five products.
319. 319. Set. 319. Set.
Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. And guys, back in our office. Feels like it's been a while since we've been in here. And we are all good and red, which tells you that we have been out at training camp all week. Packers wrapped up their first week of training camp on Saturday. They're going to get a break on Sunday. It'll probably be Monday morning by the time a lot of you are listening to this, which means the Packers will be strapping on the pads at that point. They've been in shorts and t-shirts all week. Not real football, as several of the guys in the locker room today wanted to remind us. But still, some questions that got answered and a lot more questions that came out of the first 4 days of practice. Spoon, I'm going to start with you. Just kind of your 30-second overview of the first 4 days of the 2023 training camp. First, without Aaron Rodgers.
It was what you would expect from the first 3 days. Just, I think, really, Saturday's practice was the most competitive. Saturday's practice was like a real practice. The whole structure was the way they'll run practice from this point on, pretty close anyway. And so it was a little more enjoyable to watch than all the basics stuff that they're doing. So we got a little bit of 11-on-11, got the 2-minute drill that was, you know, worth watching. Got a little more kicking and punting. So it's to me, it's off to the same start it's been for, it's actually 34 years.
That you've been doing this?
Yeah. So this is like
that's
my 34th.
That's older than
camp.
I am.
I was 2. I don't remember it, but I know I was.
You've been with the Packers longer than I've been on this earth.
That's saying something,
humbling,
isn't it?
That's why this man's a legend right here.
I don't feel a day over my age.
I tried to get Spoon to sign autographs for one of the tours yesterday, and he wouldn't do it.
No, but so it's pretty typical. I'm ready for them to put the pads on and see a little bit of something else.
Yeah. Ryan, anything that you've taken away just kind of off the top, biggest takeaway from the first 4 days?
I don't know how I have anything to add after that. I've only been here 10 years. But, no, it was thank you, Cassidy. Until the 2-minute drill got going today, it was basically glorified OTAs, as it is every year. First day in pads is Monday. That's when camp really starts. It's so far to go, and they're not in pads. It's ludicrous to make any grand overarching themes to, out of what we're seeing right now. But if you wanted to see what Jordan Love, you wanted to see him flash, he had a pretty good 2-minute drill. Now, does it mean anything? I have no idea. But it's better than having a bad 2-minute drill. He looked pretty good. He had a tremendous ball to Samori Toure on 3rd and 3 for 33 yards against Rasul Douglas and Darnell Savage down the left sideline. It beats the alternative. I mean, we can only evaluate what we've seen right now, and that's what we've seen. So he had a pretty good day for himself.
Let's start with the 2-minute drill and work backwards. Why not? Let's go this the wrong way. Jordan Love's 2-minute drill did not end in a touchdown. That was a little bit more on Luke Musgrave than on Jordan Love.
How close was it?
I was standing right there at the pylon, and it was pretty close.
I was like 3 yards to the end zone side, and so I'm not down the line, but when Luke Musgrave caught that, it looked to me like he was basically right on the goal line. Like I don't know. Do you have a better look at it?
I think he got his foot in, actually got his foot in the end zone, but the ball was outside the goal line. So it never got it over the goal line from what I could tell. It was in front of him. And that's the second time that's happened to him this week. He got stuffed by Jaire Alexander at the goal line. So that's you know, maybe something he needs to think about going
forward. And that's what I wanted to kind of touch on. Is that just a rookie thing? As you said, got stuffed by Jair. That was a big hit by Jair earlier in the week. Today, Rasul Douglas didn't necessarily, like, keep him out. He just aligned his body in such a way that Luke Musgrave would have had to go around him, and he didn't.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't go. He didn't go through him, and maybe with pads on, he goes through him and catches it, and maybe that's what he's going to have to do. I don't know. But somehow, when you're that close to the end zone, you got to get in. And it was third and one with 2 seconds left in the game. So, yeah, he needed to get in there. Somehow he needs to find a way.
So it sounds like you're saying it was more on Musgrave than Love there.
Well, it wasn't on Love in any way. Right. It was either Rasul Douglas made a good play or Musgrave didn't do enough to get in the end. So that was my feeling.
That was my same take. The ball was exactly where it needed to be. I mean, really, the entire two-minute drill was impressive. He followed it up with a good slant to Romeo Doubs for 9 yards, and then he put the ball right on the goal line for Musgrave. That's a learning moment for a rookie tight end, and we talked about that coming into camp, right? I mean, those things happen the first week of your first camp. He's talked about the being short against Jair Alexander. He said he needed maybe be a half revolution deeper on his route there. The route depth was pretty close to where he needed to be. But, having a nose for the end zone, that's something that you've got to acquire when you come to the league, and that's how it looked to me as well.
And that's something that a tight end should be as an asset to the offense. I mean, all of them, but especially a tight end. Let's touch on some of the other rookies since we're already on Luke Musgrave. This is a massive rookie class, 13 guys, and there are a couple of receivers that we haven't seen on the field at all. Grant DuBose hasn't been on the field at all. Matt LaFleur said this week that it was a back injury. He didn't elaborate too much more, but said, you know, he'll be out there when he's out there. He's losing valuable reps. But he also pointed to Christian Watson last year losing a lot of reps in training camp and took him till half the season to kind of get there, but he did eventually get there.
I don't think his injury is very serious. I was watching him do rehab, and he's I think they're just trying to – he must have had some back spasms or something, and they're trying to strengthen up his lower back. That's what I saw.
For so. 4 months?
4 months? He's been out for 4 months?
He has not been on the field one time.
Wow.
Rookie minicamp, OTAs, minicamp, nothing.
Well, that is concerning. He just looked to me like – you know, what they had him doing, that he was pretty advanced. So I guess we'll see.
Matt LaFleur even said that it's concerning for Grant DuBose, primarily because he hasn't been out there all offseason. I mean, he likened it to Christian Watson last year missing the offseason program, missing half a camp because of the knee injury. And then he comes back and he took half a season to get, and then he took off. But, you know, you're a rookie receiver. You miss this time.
Especially with the receiver core as it currently sits.
Yeah. And, I mean, let's face it. He's not pegged to be a starter anyways.
Right.
But the kid has some talent. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't realize, of course, if I'd have been at the OTAs, I would have realized that he was
OTAs are voluntary
practicing
for players and Tom Silverstein.
When you've been here 34 years – we'll cover the OTAs.
You tell Matt LaFleur when you'll be here.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also Tay Wicks was out there the first day of camp this week, and then we haven't really seen him on the field since. Is that a concern as well? Or especially, I guess more than anything, I'm asking, is it a concern in terms of this receiving core depth?
He had a concussion, and he's been around the team the last two days. So I would suspect he'll be back on Monday.
Okay.
When they practice. Otherwise, you know, those concussion, when you have a concussion, if you're not doing well, they don't let you stand around practice at all. And he's been there the last 2 days.
I watched Wicks today during individual drill, and he's standing alone on the sideline, lasered in to what the receivers were doing. So he's taking the mental reps. So he's very locked into practice. Like you said, he's out there. But how long does it linger? Because he's also a rookie, and it's looking like it could be a pretty competitive receiving group.
Yeah, you don't want to miss any days. But if he's back for pads, then, you know, no harm done.
Another rookie receiver that, to me, has stood out this week is Jaden Reed. He has received a lot of reps with Jordan Love, which is what you want to be doing at this time. Spoon, I know we were talking about the depth chart on Friday, and he seems to be the slot guy for right now.
He's no question. He is the number one slot. He lines up with, when they go with three wide receivers, it's Romeo Doubs, it's Christian Watson, and it's him. Mm-hmm. And now they're trying to fast track him because he didn't play slot in college. He was an outside receiver.
Since his freshman year.
So they are getting him, you know, indoctrinated to that position. It's not a natural position for most guys. But, you know, he's a second-round draft pick. He's expected to be in the mix. And given their receiving core, they don't exactly have a list of veterans sitting there. Yeah, he's number one, and I think they're expecting him to play a lot.
Ryan, a decent number, enough to catch my eye, number of end-arounds with Jaden Reed this week. Is that something to get excited about if you're Packers fans?
I don't think there's any question he's going to be the primary fly pre-snap motioning receiver. It's what you want in this offense out of the slot receiver position, and it's different than what they've had. It's a little different seeing Jaden Reed do it than Alan Lazard coming around the end. Mm-hmm. You know, Alan Lazard did a lot of good things, but he's not your prototypical end-around jet motion receiver.
It's not a 4.45 like Jaden Reed.
You need a speedy little guy.
Yeah, it looks different. So yeah, I mean, is it something to get excited about? Maybe about the possibility of what that could mean, but it's so early. We've got to see what that becomes.
And to both of y'all's points, this could end up being a pretty competitive receiving group as roster cutdowns loom and then into the season. I mean, you're Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, they're pretty much entrenched as your top two. I would have put some more Torrey there at three before this week, but now I might slide in Jaden Reed. Seems like Torrey's kind of been taking snaps behind Reed. But again, that could be to just give Reed more experience since he's not comfortable with that position.
And Torrey's a clear four, too. Like, yeah. He looks like he could get on the field.
What's interesting with Torrey to me, and I want y'all's opinion on this, is at least this week, again, all of this comes with the caveat. This is 1 week of training camp with no pads. It seems Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, they all have set positions, although they have been using Jaden Reed at other spots just to train him. Samori Torrey is kind of everywhere. Like, is that going to be his role in this offense, or do you want to see a little bit more of camp to kind of figure that out?
I think as the clear four, he's first up. You know, if your 11 personnel is Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, at any of those spots, he's first up on either perimeter or inside. And so, you know, the Packers tell you that they cross-train every position, especially receiver. You got to know everything. But it's nice to have a versatile guy in that spot coming off the sideline that he's going to, if he's on this trajectory, he's going to get snaps, and he can get snaps anywhere on the field.
Yeah, I think he can play just about anywhere. He could play the slot if they needed him. Really, Romeo Doubs can play the slot if they need him. I mean, he's so good off the line of scrimmage that, you know, you see, we saw it a couple of times today that Jordan Love hit him with slants. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just barely extended off the line, off the tight end, and just ran right across the middle and Love hit him. So I think Doubs could do that. They are interchangeable, but Reed has more of the, you know, what NFL guys, people look for in slot receivers, which is someone with a little quicker feet and not necessarily the size that, your outside guys have.
You know what's good news, and I just think of this as you're going through that, having so many guys that can play in the slot means that you really don't need Christian Watson in the slot. Mm-hmm. And that's something a year ago they were training him everywhere.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of, wrote a story on him after the Dallas game last year. He woke up the day of the Dallas game, texted his college coach, said it's going to be a big day. And the reason was because he was playing the X. And that's where he feels good.
Mm-hmm.
He feels good on the perimeter. And from there, that's where he took off. So you've got Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, Samori Torrey. You got a lot of slot options. You can keep Christian Watson on the outside of the field.
Yeah, I like that lineup. Put Watson at X, Romeo at Y, Jaden at Z.
You know, yeah, and but if you look at that group right now, it all sounds really promising.
Yeah,
right.
Everything sounds exactly promising come, the first week of training camp.
Yeah, come the regular season, I'd be terrified if I was Matt LaFleur.
Yeah. Because
you just don't know. You don't know what guys, you know, is Christian Watson the real deal? Is he going to be that guy he was who scored 7 touchdowns in 4 games? I don't know.
Especially
you know?
When everybody's planning for him now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be – what'll be interesting to see is cut down day or mm-hmm. right before it and seeing if they, you know, go for any kind of veteran guy at the end. Mm-hmm. See if they can bring someone in.
Now, what you do know is they're going to have some bumps along the way.
Yeah.
Devontae Adams' second year, if it can happen to him, it can right. literally happen to
and
anyone.
That's
it's not going to be perfect the entire way.
Yeah. That's going to be the danger is that this sophomore slump is going to happen to the three guys you're depending on the most in that
yeah.
receiver unit.
It can go both ways. I mean, Greg Jennings was kind of a, you know, he had it. You could tell he was going to be a good receiver his first year. But, you know, he didn't have a ton of receptions. Then the second year, all of a sudden, you know, you're like, oh, okay, this guy's going to possibly be their top receiver at some point. So that yeah. could happen for Christian Watson. That could happen for Dobbs. It's just such a roll of the dice with mm-hmm. wide receivers. You just, you know, they're so overdrafted a lot of times and you don't know for sure.
You know who had two of the best? I'm just saying this just to start stuff. You know who had two of the best catches today? Again, they were both on air. Neither one of them were in 11-on-11. But the guy they brought in this week, Crest.
Yeah.
He had a long one from Love, and then he had a one-handed one over the middle.
Yeah. That Malik Heath has yeah. got some
I
talent,
like
too.
Heath.
I mean, that kid is he's really got good feet and quickness in the short area for a bigger guy. So, but again, you know, we're going to keep talking about how great these guys are, and then we'll find out in the regular season whether they're really great or not.
Malik Heath is fascinating because
he's going to mess around and make this team.
From the OTAs, he got first team reps. Like, he undrafted rookie.
Yeah,
comes in and he's the early dark horse candidate to be the rookie undrafted guy that makes this roster. That's Malik Heath, and we'll see what he does with it. I have no idea. I mean, it can go either way, but yeah. he's in position.
Well, you see, guys. I mean, Alan Lazard. You know, he didn't make it his first year, but he did. You know, make it as an undrafted guy, and those things happen.
What
you know?
Works in Malik Heath's favor, in my opinion, is because sometimes that transition from college to the NFL is a reality check for guys. He's coming from Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin. He's probably got the most extensive route tree of any receiver coming out of college in the Packers locker room. Like, that's just that playbook they have to learn there is intense. Let's move on real quick to we spent some time on Luke Musgrave, but Tucker Kraft as well. Is between Musgrave and Kraft, they've been giving those two a lot of reps with Jordan Love. We're seeing them use Josiah DeGuara in the backfield a lot as a fullback. That could just be to give Musgrave and Kraft reps right now. Is that sort of the thinking?
Well, what stands out to me is that they're rotating all four of those tight ends. Tyler Davis, too,
yeah.
with the first team. All four of them are getting a lot of first team reps the early days of camp, and I don't know if that'll continue. I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, and Luke Musgrave, in terms of reps right now, is clearly ahead of Tucker Kraft. Tucker Kraft had a ice pack on his quad, took a knee to his quad today, got a little banged up, not a major thing. But he's gotten fewer first-team reps, but they're rotating all four. And Tyler Davis is a guy that, you know, he's probably making this team for special teams. So that maybe is the most surprising thing of that position, see how many first-team reps he's got.
Yeah, my impression is that Luke Musgrave is – high on the list. Like, it seems like a lot of times when they just start out the very first play of the 11-on-11s, he's in the game. Mm-hmm. And you know, DeGuara's going to be a guy who's kind of a all purpose. You know, do they need him to go in motion? Do they need him to be in fullback? You know, he'll be on the field. But Musgrave is going to be – I mean, they're going to develop him fast because I think they think he can be a really good receiver. And you can see that too. I mean, he gets open. Mm-hmm. So, the big thing for him is can he block and can he deal with linebackers who are going to just mug him at the line of scrimmage?
And can he clean up some of the drops, which could just be early camp stuff too. But he's – He's got to work a little bit on the consistency. From he can have one day where he's like, it's like he's got stickum on his hands, and the next day it's he can't catch water falling out of a boat. Like you said, he gets open, the ball's there.
It's he can run. I've seen him get open on a couple of routes where you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You haven't seen very many of those in your 34 years, have you?
Not since Keith Jackson, you know, that you don't see a lot. Well, JerMichael Finley did that a little bit, but yeah, that's not been a staple of the Packers.
Is that the most impressive tight end you've seen here?
JerMichael Finley? Yeah, physically. I mean, Keith Jackson was one of the best of all time, or at least of his era, and he was at the end of his career when he came here. But he was still pretty good. Like you could, the dude knew how to get open. And, you know, Chimura was really good at getting open too, but he wasn't a downfield threat. Finley was just like, you just looked at him and like, wow, the potential here is unbelievable.
Yeah. There you go, Luke Musgrave, something to work towards. One more offensive guy I want to talk about real quick before we switch over to defense. We finally saw him taking reps with the offense today. Keyshawn Nixon was down there. Did y'all catch that? All kidding aside, there's no way they risk that when he's their nickel guy, is it?
Geez, I would hope not after they saw him go down on that punt return today where he was down on his knees for like 2 minutes and then he popped back up. You know, I don't know if he got, you know, hurt in the sensitive area or what, but he was down. He was down, and there are a lot of people standing around going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So,
that's a game changer to this team if Keyshawn Nixon gets hurt.
I think it's really funny, too, because he and Jaden Reed are sort of connected as slots, you know. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get each other better. You know, they're battling in practice every day in the slot. Plus, they're both returners.
Yeah.
So they spend all this time together. And now if Keyshawn Nixon was going to, you know, go on the other side of the ball a little bit, that would be pretty interesting.
That's,
you know,
are connected. That's a great point.
Two guys connected.
I think, and Matt LaFleur said this at the owners' meeting this spring, I think they're going to make sure that Keyshawn Nixon is good and ready at slot corner until they start really tampering with the offensive stuff. Seeing him take a couple reps or
it's just so funny because I like just assumed this was just a joke, but it keeps coming up and
he was over with the receivers, right, doing some
indie drills.
And I don't know if he was just goofing around or if that was like really real or what.
If he comes in and secures that slot corner role and he takes another leap as a returner and those things are good, at that point, maybe it, you know, having a package in there for him, maybe they think about that at that point.
Why not?
Yeah. But not until that point. And there's a while to go until they reach.
If he's the nickel corner, he's playing 70% of the snaps on defense. Yeah. So, and he's kick returning, and who knows, he could even be punt returning. He's on some of the special teams, on the coverage teams too. Uh-huh. He was on kick coverage today too. So. I mean, he's a bad dude.
All four
he's
sides of the ball.
Really tough as nails, but yeah, you got to be careful there.
I'm not even going to be surprised now when he does it. Speaking of returning, let's stop on special teams here for a second. Not a great day for Anders Carlson. When do you get worried about that if you're Matt LaFleur?
I wouldn't be worried about it now. I'd be worried about it if he comes out the next practice and misses 5 of 6. You know, then maybe it's starting to get in his head. But I don't know what the circumstances were. I didn't talk to him. Did anybody talk to him?
No. The only thing I wonder, so he made 5 of 6 his first time that out in camp. And he was kicking with the wind at his back. And today he was kicking into the wind. And I wonder if that's just a thing of getting used to –
is Green Bay. He's going to have to get used to that.
Yeah. Exactly. I know one of, like, I saw one of the snaps was really bad, down at O'Donnell's feet. And then another one was a little sketchy. So I don't know if that had it, but it just looked like the kicks he missed had no, like, force behind them. They were kind of like pop-ups in the wind. It's almost like he didn't hit them. like maybe he's going to have to adjust the way he hits it because the wind seemed to take it. You know, I thought they were online at first, and then they just kind of drifted.
See, my takeaway, because he's kicking from 50 plus, and he's kicking into the wind. My takeaway is he's got leg. Like, he's got him. You can see why they liked him, because he's got the leg to get him there from 50 plus into the wind. It's just a matter of consistency, which, you know, we talk about all the time, offensive, defensive rookies, but a kicker, you need even, you know, more consistency at that position. He's got the leg, just might require a little patience, but as you know, not a lot of patience.
But, you know, the thing when you would see with Mason Crosby is that when he had a long kick and into the wind, he would keep it a more line drive. Yeah. He knew how the wind might affect a pop-up type mm-hmm. kick, and I wonder if he needs to figure that out, you know, that's something he's still figuring out.
Then... Sorry, I was sending a text to Pete. I just wanted to double check something. Let's just wrap up special teams here. As you said, Keyshawn Nixon, Jaden Reed both been working at return. So have Romeo Doubs, Samari Torre. Neither one of those were super surprising. Aaron Jones also took some punt returns on Saturday. I don't think we'll see that in a game, but no. Nice to know you have that option there.
Did Tyler Goodson get some too? Someone with a
did
penny.
Did he? I didn't see.
Someone with a penny. I thought it was Tyler Goodson.
Could have been.
Penny?
Yeah, one of those scout team pennies on.
Oh, the little, like, I didn't know the word for that. Learn something new every day.
No, I've never heard that either. Are you talking about the mesh jersey?
Yeah.
The colored mesh jersey?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It's either that's either what it's called, or I just totally made that word up.
Could be.
Shakespeare
it's
made one, Shakespeare
it's day made, four of camp. Yeah. I don't know where I'm at right now.
Shakespeare made words up all the time.
No, another special teams thing that was pretty interesting was the other punter, Danny Whelan. That kid was just launching bombs. I talked to him afterwards, and I'm going to write on him this week, but. He is a big kid, and he was kicking into the wind and had like 45-yard punts with 4.7 hang time. You know, I was keeping his hang time when he was going into the wind, and he was like, oh, man, I was expecting 5.0, you know, and I'm like,
jeez.
But he has a big, big leg. Now, who knows? You know, he was the top punter in XFL, and he's someone to watch because a ball comes off his foot. He did not have a shank either.
No, he did not.
They're switching days. So O'Donnell gets all the punts one day, and then Whelan gets them the next. He's a first-year player. He got cut from New Orleans after a month last year. And there's kind of an interesting story with that. But it's just a guy worth watching, you know. You don't know until these guys get into games. He might go into the first preseason game and shank 4-1. We've seen that before. But it was kind of fun to watch his balls. I mean, they were popping.
You know what else stands out to me about these specialists is between the punters, the kickers, and the long snappers that they have here right now, they could go play 5-on-5 against somebody and take them. I've never seen such a tall group of specialists.
Yeah,
they're all over 6 foot.
They are tall.
Yeah, they could have a good big three team, you know.
They could, yeah, go like 3-on-3 with all.
I wonder
six
if any of them can dunk.
I'll bet you Whelan can. I mean, he's really tall. He's like 6'4".
Let's see. Yeah. The list of that. I have my reading glasses.
Are there any under readers. 6 foot? No, I think they're all over 6 foot.
6'5".
6'5"?
6'5" punter. Yeah.
That's a forward.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big dude.
How tall is Carlson?
He's like 6'3", I think. 6'4".
No, he's 6'5", too.
Which means he's 6'4".
Wow. This other kid, Whelan, is like built, though. Like, he's got the big, broad shoulders, and you could tell he works in the weight room a lot.
So he could take out a returner.
Yeah, he could hurt someone.
Yeah. I think this is the most time we spent on special teams in a long time.
I know. We'll dude was born in Ireland, too,
dude,
by the way.
You were just telling us so much about this
Well,
dude.
You'll know more about it when I write about it. Because
Ireland. I remember them signing him. Does he have an Irish accent?
Not really. He came to the U.S. when he was 13, so it's kind of like you could tell a little bit, but not like I've been to Ireland and it was not like
he had just walked off the boat.
No.
Here's what I want to know: Guinness or Jameson?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. I'll have to ask him.
Have to track him down.
Or Smittick's.
Have to track him down next week. Okay, let's jump to defense real quick before we do wrap up. Defense technically has won the day every day this week. That's to be expected a little bit.
Except
in the
first Saturday.
Week.
They lost Saturday, didn't they?
No, they won every day. They won again today. Or Saturday. They won again Saturday.
It was the
two-minute drill.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
The two-minute drill was the competitive drill.
Yeah, but they kicked the field goal.
The starting offense won the two-minute drill against the starting defense, but the second and third-string defense definitely won. So I wonder if it was just best out of three.
Yeah. Or maybe because they didn't score a touchdown. Because they didn't have a score. Usually you have to score a touchdown in those two-minute drills. It was 0-0 on the
It was kind of interesting, though, because, like, Jordan Love – it forced the only two-minute drill that we've seen. Couldn't ask for much more. Like he looked really good in that one two-minute drill. So, like, from that perspective, offense won. Because if Jordan Love had a good day, the offense won. But then, okay, there's a second-string offense. There's a third-string offense.
And I don't think either one of them crossed midfield.
No, and they were stymied.
Love had a pretty good day all the way around. Like, for the first time, I saw him just, like, let it go. Yeah. You know, like he hit Jaden Reed on a really nice corner, and then someone else he hit on a somewhere deep, and then he threw to Christian Watson, and he just uncorked it, threw it over his head. Yeah. But that's what you got to do with Christian. Remember earlier in the week he underthrew all those passes, and this time he just looked to me like he was a lot more confident.
The interesting thing about that is when he overthrew Christian Watson, the wind was at his back.
That's true.
And when he underthrew earlier in camp, he was throwing into the wind. And I asked him, first time he talked to us a couple of days ago, how much are you trying to, you know, account for the wind? And he said it was more early in camp, the deep ball's not just going to come out. You've got to develop that. The intermediate stuff, that can come, but it takes time for the deep ball. But you see where the ball's going in the wind, I'd have to think it has something to do with it.
Yeah, but – there was another play where he kind of underthrew Watson on a corner route earlier in the week, and Watson went back to him, and Love was like, all right, from now on, I'm just throwing it over your head. You know, I'm just going to throw it out there and let you go get it. And I think he was trying to be too perfect, and you don't need to be perfect with Christian Watson. You just need to put it out there.
He had one to Watson today on Saturday and one to Dobbs on Saturday as well that – were both really impressive. Neither one of them were huge. The one to Watson, I think, would have been an explosive play if I could have seen the yard lines a little closer. But both over the middle, Dobbs especially was just in a tight, tight window. Dobbs has good hands, which helps. But those, at least to me, are almost a little bit tougher than those deep balls because you're fighting against traffic. You're fighting against, you know, tight windows, people closing in. And both that to Watson and Dobbs were just on a rope.
Love's bread and butter is across the middle. He's going to have to learn to throw deep. I mean, that's big. You know, I was just, for whatever reason, when I was talking to Christian Watson, you know, the first thing I was thinking about was, you know, that drop he had against Minnesota and how perfect that ball that Aaron Rodgers threw to him was on the first play of the game. And it was, I mean, could that have been thrown any better in any way? It dropped right into his hands. And I'm thinking, wow, that's 15 years of experience throwing deep balls. And Jordan Love's got no years experience throwing that ball.
He's been good short to intermediate each day.
Yeah.
He's been on the money, on time, which is important.
Most of the time, yeah.
Pretty much each day. The difference Saturday is that he hit some deep balls. And, I mean, you're seeing that kind of come on. Now, again, it's early. The question doesn't mean anything.
Like, right.
If it comes out Monday, first day in pads, and he can't hit a deep ball to save his life, well, we're right back to ground zero, right? He has to continue it, but
my main point was just that that's the first time I've seen him just uncork it. Just let it fly, and that's what he seemed to do on Saturday.
Which it sounds like that's what Matt LaFleur is telling him to do.
Yeah, they want him to do.
Based on what LaFleur said, you know, just – just let it fly, let it loose, and see what happens. This is when we want you to experiment, as opposed to, you know, October.
It shows what kind of arm he has. He does have a good arm. Mm-hmm. You know, he can spin it.
Right.
Throws a nice spiral.
That was our conversation segue into the defense.
Yeah,
we
right.
We started talking about the defense. Well, 7 minutes
it's all about
ago.
Jordan Love.
You can
right
expect
now.
This all season yeah. long that everything will go back to Jordan Love.
I do just want to touch on a couple of things on the defense real quick. Lucas Van Ness has taken reps with first, second, and third team. He was asked on Saturday, you know, has it been imparted to you how important it is for you to be ready so that Rashawn Gary doesn't need to be rushed? And he was like, yes, that's the plan for me to be ready week one so that they're not worried about Gary. What do you need to see from him? What did you see from him this first week? What do you need to see from him when the pads come on to feel like he could feasibly be ready for week one?
Well, I bet we have similar answers, but I want to see him in the one-on-one pass drill. You know, let's see how he does against Zach Tom and Yash Nyman, if he's coming from that left side, and if he's coming from the right side, let's see how he does with Bakhtiari mm-hmm. and Nyman. You know, I just want to see what kind of pass rush moves he
Jenkins.
Has. No, he'd be in the left side. He'll be in a, yeah, be a going guard. Against the tackle.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Identical answers, Spoon, one-on-ones. And it makes me think of, what was it, 2019, where Sean Gary came in, and as a rookie, he was wrecking one-on-ones. I mean, you saw that right away. Now, it took time to translate that to 11-on-11.
Right. Once people knew all he could do was a power move, right. then they stopped him. But
if you're, you know, measurables going in the draft, awfully similar to Rashawn Gary, one spot later taken in the draft, Rashawn Gary came in and wrecked one-on-ones. I'm very curious to see what Lucas Van Ness does with one-on-ones.
Yeah, to your point, Cassidy, he may go up against Elgton Jenkins because, you know, I think they're going to use him as an inside pass rusher, too. Nice. I think that's something I think Gutekunst talked about that when they drafted him, that maybe he could rush inside, too. So we may see him take some snaps inside as well.
One more thing on defense, too. I know you spoke to Quay Walker on Saturday, Ryan. He was asked point blank. I mean, you, after losing your head twice in games now, you know opponents are going to come after you. What are you going to do? What did he say?
He's doing some meditation stuff with Jaire Alexander now. Then I asked him, okay, that's well and good during the week, but from play to play, you know, what are you? And he's like, yeah, I get emotional when I step on the field. So it's a lot of self-talk between snaps, and he knows that a veteran offensive lineman's going to come and try to start some because he had two of his worst moments on national TV for everyone in the world to see, and everyone in the NFL is included in everyone in the world. Like, every offensive lineman that he's going to go against, they know, okay, this is a guy you can get under his skin, maybe get him out of the game. He knows that that's coming. It's a fascinating offseason for him because he had a really – you take those two moments away, he had a really solid rookie year. Mm-hmm. For a rookie inside linebacker coming in playing 800-plus snaps, there was a lot of good there, a lot to build on going into year two. And then the exact opposite of that, he had two of just his worst moments. He said that he didn't give himself a lot of grace this offseason. He said it wasn't until he came back in OTAs talked with a team psychologist that he was able to give himself grace and then move on. He was hard on himself, and it made it so that it was kind of hard to appreciate the good from his rookie season. But if he can get that under control, there is a lot of good there. I mean, he had a solid first season in the NFL, a lot to like. So it's fascinating. It's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, good on the field. It's between the snaps. He knows he's got to do better.
Yeah. And he was asked about, like, what do you do when they start talking? He said, I've just got to walk back to the huddle. Just walk back to the huddle.
You know, I don't think it's talking that sets him off. I think it's when guys get their hands on him. And I think you're going to see offensive linemen. You know how they like to see who's the last guy to let go? I think you're going to see that all the time with Quay Walker. Guys are going to do that to him, and he's going to have to just keep his cool.
He said that point blank. He said he knows he's going to get shot. He knows it's coming. It's not just the talking. It's the, you know, at the end of the whistle, maybe a little after the whistle, that last little contact. Because he's a little chippy.
Think about it. Both times. Excuse me. In Buffalo, it was a guy who was actually helping him get up. you know, guy on the sideline. And then in Detroit, it was the trainer who was trying to get in there to look at his guy. And so, yeah, he's got to figure that out.
I almost wonder if we see them training him during camp with that. Like, tell whoever he's going up against, keep your hands on him for a little bit longer.
You know. I tell Elton Jenkins, do it, because he's not going to be able to beat Elton Jenkins up at all. You know, he's going to lose that one every time. So
I'm actually going to keep my eye on that now. That could be interesting to watch. We'll be able to tell a lot more about the defense, too, when the pads come on. That's what they're looking forward to. But as we said,
add. Think about this. How interesting are those joint practices going to be for him?
Yes.
Because what do you see at joint practices? You see it get chippy to the point of scuffles and kind of fighting, not really.
Travis Kelce threw a punch today in their practice.
Yeah, you know, if I'm Matt LaFleur, I'm going over to Zach Taylor and being like, okay, we don't want anything to get out of hand, but if you want to give Quay Walker a little nudge, test him out, be my guest.
Can I just say that if you throw a punch in the NFL, you should have to sit in the corner with a dunce cap on.
Yeah, those helmets are hard.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
You know,
that
what
hurts.
Are you doing that for?
If
you know,
do it, you have to use your helmet. Isn't that what Myles Garrett did?
Yeah, yeah. Josh Sutton did that once too. It was a huge scrum, and he took his helmet off, and I swear he slammed it on someone. Ooh. I can't remember. You know.
If you're going to be stupid, you got to be tough.
Yeah.
But as I said, we're going to be able to talk a lot more about the defense once the pads get on, too. We have seen some good plays from the secondary, but again, it's a little take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, they won't. LaFleur said today, and I thought that was interesting, that he does not want his pass rushers to bull rush anybody. He doesn't want them putting his offensive linemen on their butts in this 3 days, you know, when they're not in pads. So, I mean, what kind of disadvantage is that? There's nothing you can tell, really, from them, from their pass rushing and everything.
That being said, he is still fostering competition. We've seen either up-downs or sit-ups for 3 of the 4 days now when they're doing competition periods. Spoon, you called it a Lombardi-era throwback.
Yeah.
How often have you seen this in your 34 years?
Well, I wasn't there for the Lombardi practices, but I've seen and read, the books. It was a brutal exercise to stand there and run in place and then have to get it, you know, go down on a push-up position or on your belly and then get back up and keep running. And I mean, we should get Cliff Kristol on here, you know, and he can tell us what it was really like, but I've never seen that in a practice.
It's almost like a college thing.
Yeah, it is a college
thing. Offense versus defense, whoever wins the day. And granted, they only have to do – so offense has lost the three competitive periods this week, which is why they've had to do the up-downs. They have to only do 10.
Yeah.
It's not like they're doing 50.
And plus, they like cheat. Like,
yeah.
They're
Josiah DeGuara is like doing a total cheat move.
Yeah, and they're almost on the way back down by the time they get up. The ones I've seen that the Lombardi guys had to do, I mean, they had to get straight back up and keep jogging, and then they go down. Okay, then get all the way back up. And jog in place and then go down. You know, it's like these guys were cheating.
That being said, does it still help sort of like ignite some competition that you need during camp?
I don't think anyone wants to do up downs, even if you're doing half up downs.
No.
No. I like the down downs.
If I gave you $5 right now, could you do 10 up downs?
Yes, you could. My money's on Spoon.
No, I could do like a modified burpee kind of thing, you know. But I don't think I could do up downs.
Yeah. I call your bluff on that, Spoon. We're gonna have to do that off camera.
Well, we will be back next week, and we will have another podcast recapping next week of training camp. And as we said, the pads go on Monday. It's when the real football starts. They'll have a week here in Green Bay before going to Cincinnati the week afterwards. So it will be exciting to see, and we will be here for you every day. So make sure you're following the live blog on JSOnline and PackersNews.com with live updates from practice. Pete Doherty has his insider every day after practice as well, and then we will all have a variety of stories to recap for you from practice and the locker room as the Packers continue on through training camp. Guys, any final thoughts? Do you have anything you want to use your 30 seconds for, Spoon?
No.
He's like, please let me leave.
I'm just hungry.
Okay. Well, we can take care of both of those by wrapping up now. Thanks so much, guys. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
Green 19. Green 19. Green 19.